Welcome to the latest episode of Global Class, a podcast where we explore the international expansion stories of the world's fastest growing companies and the career journeys of the globally minded leaders. My name is Klaus Wiehe, and I'm here with my co-host Aaron McDaniel. And we help companies scale to new markets. Go to globalclasscompany.com to learn more.
Thanks, Klaus. So we're excited this week to welcome Freddie Marcos, who is the founder of Rentbrella, a company that helps provide umbrellas increasingly in different cities across the world. And in our conversation, we talk a bit about his career experience working in financial services, studying in multiple countries. But then, you know, talking about some of the insights, he talks about how to think globally, but start building locally, the importance of feedback loops that you create within your organization, the importance of setting up two-way innovation, hiring strong local teams. Lots of great insights. So enjoy the episode. So Freddie, welcome to the podcast. We're happy to have you here and explore a little bit more about you and your journey and hear more about your company. So why don't we start, before we get into Rentbrella, why don't we go way back to when you were little and kind of, you know, going through you growing up and your early career. We often like to start with what we found to be these interesting formative experiences that very globally minded business leaders have. So what showed you that there was a world beyond your backyard?
So thank you for having me here. I'm very happy to tell a little bit about my career and about Rentbrella. So actually, I always loved to travel around the world. It was also always, every single vacation, I wanted to travel in a different country to know more locations. And when I started studying, I focused my career on business. So I studied business administration in one of the most prestigious universities in Brazil. And as soon as I got an opportunity, I studied like 3 months at Babson College in the United States, entrepreneurship, but very focused on international expansion. So when I always wanted to have my own business, I wanted to open my own company. And when I wanted to open a company, I wanted to make a global business. So that's was always my mission. That's what I always wanted to do. And I started so business. Then I decided to work a little for a few months at investment banking. But I soon realized it wasn't for me. I wanted to get deeper on the operations. I wanted to feel the company, to think deeply how we can like change the world. So that was my move. So I left investment banking. I started helping my father in his technology and logistics company. It was great. And as soon as I met Nathan, which is my co-founder, we realized we wanted to open something together. We started working together in a youth movement. It was great. He became president of this youth movement. I became vice president. And then we started thinking about new ideas, what we could start together. And then that's when we started Rentbrella.
So real quick, let's talk a little bit more about your involvement with your father's business. Was that a Brazilian business or was that a global business?
It was a Brazilian business. My father, he's not from Brazil. He's from Lebanon, but he moved to Brazil when he was a little. And it's a Brazilian business. It's about like distribution in telecommunications and IT. It's a local business, but I think it has potential to go global. And I got into the business to manage and to help him. But soon I realized I wanted to start something from the scratch. And I met Nathan, and that was my mission to build something global with my friend Nathan.
And how do you think that cultural background, your dad being from Lebanon, has sort of shaped your thinking in business today as well? What is sort of the learnings from your upbringing that you're putting into developing Rentbrella that it is today?
First, I think when I think about a leader that really inspired me, I think my father really inspired my career. He always was an entrepreneur. He opened a couple of business and he was really resilient, especially when working. He worked for long hours and always tried to provide the best life for my family. And I saw him working, and I was like, since I was a little, I knew I would open my own company. I would work just like him and being very focused and trying to make something big. So he, when I think about an inspiration, I think he was one of my biggest inspirations.
Awesome. So let's go through a little bit of your professional background that you mentioned a little bit earlier. You've been a finance director, you've been in investment banking, you've been a COO. How do some of these skill sets that you refined over time also come together as you being a founder and CEO of a fast-growing company?
Yeah, so during my career, it was like quite fast. So I decided to start Brandrella with 26 years old. So so I was still young, but I had a couple of experiences that were really important to me and helped me to realize that I was prepared to start something from scratch from the beginning. So first, my experience at the junior enterprise at the university when I was working there, studying and also working, was my first experience working, and it was great. Like I deal with a lot of consulting projects regarding operations, marketing, sales, finances, and I love the way I could deal with different clients, deal with different projects, and it was great. Then investment banking, it was great that I could see a lot of business. They could deal with a lot of different clients and different areas, but they could not get deeper on the operations. With my father's company, it was great because I could deep and could get really deep in the operations, could understand what was happening, could deal with employees, with culture, with leadership, and it was great. And then I realized, okay, there is a moment to start something. Or it's now or it's never, because I was almost getting married. And when you get married and things get more complicated in your life, you need to have children, and then it's much more difficult to deal with a new company. So it was the perfect moment to try something by myself and to start something different. So it was the right moment. Probably now I'm married. I have a beautiful 3-year-old daughter, and my wife is also, she's pregnant of a boy right now. It can be born anytime. So probably now it would be very risky to start something and to try something different. So probably now it would be a different path. But at that moment, I was sure it was the right strategy.
Well, first and foremost, obviously, congratulations the second one coming very soon. Aaron and myself, we have 2 kids, so be ready for that exponential sort of, stress curve when you become a parent of 2. It becomes a little bit harder to divide and conquer, right? In terms of, I wanted to dive a little bit into when Rentbrella, you started to expand the business, right? Can you talk a little bit more about when did it start? And how long did it take before you took the business to international markets? And what were some of the initial hurdles or learnings you learned along the way that then also helped you refine that strategy going forward as well?
Perfect. So once my co-founder, Nathan, he was coming out from the subway, it was crowded and no one could leave because it was raining. So he saw a sharing bike passing by and he thought, if no one needs to have a bike of their own to move around the city, why people are here waiting for an umbrella? So he called me, and then we started thinking and how we could make and how we could offer an umbrella sharing system to the people, and how we could monetize the business model. So we found that everyone hates to carry an umbrella, especially when it's not raining. And when it starts raining, you never have an umbrella. So it was the perfect solution, especially for São Paulo, where we lived. So São Paulo is known as the city of the drizzle. It's always drizzling, it's always raining. And so it was a great solution. When we created Rentbrella, I think we thought we had the global mindset by day one. So we wanted to create a company with an English name, because as soon as we start like expanding worldwide, the name would be already great. So we thought about Rentbrella. It's easy, like renting umbrella, so the name would be easy for anyone. Even in Brazil, the name is difficult to pronunciate. So people here like will say, "Ah, hello, I'm from Rentbrella." Say, "What? Rentbrella?" So it's a little bit difficult to pronunciate in Portuguese. But globally, it's an easy name. It could work anywhere. So we started Rentbrella. We thought it was already like we'll make expansion global. We'll make this happen everywhere in the world. So let's make the name in English. Let's write all the codes in English. Let's think about like the international expansion by day one. So we started locally. So we started in São Paulo in 2018. We launched the main street in São Paulo. We started to grow to more locations. So it's interesting to explain how does it work first. So when it's raining, people can grab an umbrella for free. You always have 24 hours free each time you grab an umbrella. So if you get an umbrella today, you return it tomorrow, it's free. If you get it on Friday, you return it on Monday, it's free. So we build the business model free for users. And then we bring brands to sponsor the whole ecosystem, like City Bike in New York, like Itaú Bikes here in Brazil. So we manage the business, and we thought about this business model that would be great for users, because it's free and everyone loves free services. And for the brands, it would be great because it's like a huge brand activation in the city when it's raining. So it was great. So we launched in 2018. In 2019, one of the biggest health insurance companies in Brazil, called Unimed, they came to us and they said, okay, we want to sponsor the whole city. We want to make like the Itaú Bikes for umbrellas. So it was great because we could like grow our business quite fast. So we grew up to more than 400 locations in São Paulo. So it was like really, really, it was a rush. Like in a few months, like we were installing like almost 20 locations per day. So it was like a very, very fast expansion. And then by the end of 2018, we had already a profitable operation in Brazil. It was great, and we thought, why not expanding to other cities around the world? Like before expanding in Brazil, in other cities in Brazil, we thought, if you dominate like New York, London, like the main city in the world, we can be a global player. So let's focus on our international expansion. But when we think about expansion, we always think it's easy. Okay, let's go, let's try, let's see what happened. But it's very complex. And so it was like more than a year to prepare the whole international expansion. And by like the starting 2020, we were hit by COVID. And COVID, like it was like really bad for us because everyone was back home. No one was leaving. Like all the places were closed. People were like in home office, making all the meetings at home. No one was leaving. No one needed an umbrella. So we had to push back a little bit our like expansion plan to make sure it would work and it would be the right moment. So we decided to we launched in 2018. On 2020, like starting 2020, we decided to go like to start from New York in the United States, and then we could only launch like by the end of 2021 after things were better after vaccination and things were better with COVID. One thing that's important that happened, and it was good because it was like a long process, and it was like luckily in the same moment of the COVID pandemic, so we could like take advantage of this time. So it was the like when we expand to other cities, and especially in the US, Europe, we have a lot of regulations and certifications that you need to fill. And especially when, in our case, that we have a hardware, we had a lot of certifications to make sure it would be like safe, to have all the requirements for a global presence. So this process was almost a year to have machine certified for the US and Europe. And it was like the same time of COVID. So after we got certification, we were ready to produce the machines and to send them to the United States and to start our expansion. And so we launched it in October 2021 in New York. It was like a very good launch. We used this time to build the relationship with all the partners, with clients, with stakeholders. So when we started in New York, we were almost ready. And then as we had all this time to build all these relationships to start operation, we decided to start London a little bit early. So we started in London in May, and it was much easier than in the United States. And we started growing really, really fast. Today already, like, London's operation is bigger than New York's operation. So it was even faster. I think we were more prepared. We already knew what to do and how to hire, how to manage, how to build all the relationships, and how to start the operations in an international country. So that was great.
Awesome. That gives us a really great perspective on your guys' growth. The obviously right now you're talking about some big cities, London, New York, different reasons behind that. One thing that I'm curious about is a little bit of the cultural side when it comes to market selection. So as an example, in some areas there is tropical rain, so it like kind of comes out of nowhere, it's short and then goes away, versus, you know, sustained rain. I also think just the umbrellas are interesting. I'm sure there's some facts around this, but when I think of umbrellas and like sunglasses, those are the things you always want to have that you never seem to have on you when you need it. But you know, in some of our research, we had talked to Elise Rubin, who is head of international product for Google Nest, and she was talking about how in different places, fresh air means different things. So in Japan, as an example, fresh air means like open up the windows, let the fresh air in. But in Korea, because of some of their air quality issues, it's actually close the windows and like keep the bad air out. So I'm just curious, culturally, with what you've learned, like what does raining mean? Like, are some place, you know, in some places culturally, like, it's great, let's just walk in the rain, let the rain come down on our head. You know, others, you know, it's different. Just kind of curious that side of things and maybe how that factors into your market selection.
Perfect. Amazing. So when we like select a new country, we always look for like three main things. First, it needs rain. Like, it doesn't make sense to go to Arizona or to like to Israel, to Tel Aviv, because it doesn't rain. So our product like doesn't have the right value in this location. So at least it needs to rain. It needs rain like properly. So that's one of the things that we need to go, like, we need to check. We need to understand very deeply if our business makes sense to this like city, to this square. Another thing that we always look is like the density of the city. So if people really walk, if there are a lot of people there. So when we see about like it's obvious when you see like New York, when you see London, because there are like are crowded locations where people use the subway like very regularly, people walk, so people need umbrellas to, like, if there is an umbrella available and it's raining and it's free, while people wouldn't get it. Even if it's like a soft rain or it's a heavy rain, like, even if you're going, like, you need to even an umbrella to go and get inside a Uber. If it's free, I'll get it, and then I will leave my building and I get the umbrella and I get inside the Uber and I go home. So like people need the service even for a few moments, for a few, like, if you need like for 30 minutes walk, it's something. If you need for 10 minutes walk, that's okay. And as our service is free for the people, there is no like resistance on using our service. So that's something really, really good. And the third point is, how is the advertising and media marketing in this region? So when we think about, okay, thousands of umbrellas in Times Square or hundreds of thousands of umbrellas in the Piccadilly Circus in London, it's all so obvious that many brands want to have a brand exposure. And we think about our service, like today we have like not many opportunities to be part of people's life. Okay, you have like the bikes, that is not only an advertising, it's an experience. And you have like umbrellas, because it's another thing that you can give people. They use your brand, you carry the brand on your hand, you will be protected by this brand. So, but it doesn't make sense. Okay, you have like small cities with 10,000 people, maybe it doesn't make sense there. And when we build our product, like we always think about these three factors. And today it's easy to expand because we are looking to big cities, to big locations. When we start in those locations, we build the whole operation and then we grow organically locally. So let's take Brazil as an example. We started in Brazil, we build the operation in São Paulo, which is the biggest city, which has like over 20 million people living here and working here. So it's like a big country in Europe. and we focus operation here. Then many other companies started to look for our solution and said, okay, I want this solution for my city, for my location. So we started to grow to other cities organically based on the main city operations. So for example, in Brazil, after like we got New York, we got London, now we're growing to other cities. So we launched it like a few months ago, we launched it in Rio de Janeiro with Petrobras, which is like the biggest oil company in Brazil. We launched, we have like in Porto Alegre, we have in Curitiba. We are growing to other cities, but organically. We don't need like a huge like expansion team and all the process that we need when we make like an international expansion. And we are doing the same in the United States, in the UK, and we are doing the same, like we are going to do the same in Europe. So we focus on the main city, we dominate the city, and then we grow organically to like other cities around this country, and then we take the whole country. So that's what that was our strategy. And now, for example, we can like in Brazil, we can even attend some regions with 20,000 people. That's okay. Like we have operations, like we're now installing operations in other cities that have like 50,000 people, and it works because, okay, we have already a big operation in the main city, and then I can expand to the whole country and offer the service. And one important thing about our product, it's quite different when you have like a software or an app that you can plug like everywhere. Oh, okay, like we see a lot of companies that say, I have like 100 countries that today I have 100 countries because they have like 5 users in the United States, they have 10 users in the UK, 5 users in Paris. It's easy because, okay, they are plugged everywhere and they have operations. But in our case, we need to build a whole operation. So we need to like have operations, maintenance, logistics, team, sales. And like we need to bring machines there, to install the machines there, to maintain the machines there, to clean the whole operation that we build there. So it's much more difficult when we have like a whole operation. It's like a real world operation. It's not only like an online software that you can plug anywhere.
Right.
And that was like if you think about our business, that's a problem, that's a challenge, but that's also an opportunity. But when it's difficult for more competitors, for more companies to install, to grow, and to operate in those countries. So we build our business model in this way, and I think we were really successful on our like international expansion strategy. So when you think about our strategy of growing worldwide, we build an expansion team. This team go to each country. They hire the team. They train the team. They make sure the operation is stable, and then they move to another country. So it was a really right strategy, but it wasn't easy. So when you think about New York, I think we had to hire and fire like more than 3 times the whole team, right. Until we were like right on the right people, the right culture, and the right the right talents for our team. And when we got in London, we already knew how to do it. So we were like right in the first moment, and we never like fire anyone in London. So it was like, I think each moment we get understanding about culture, about how things are done in each location, and then we get more used to it, and then you make it easier.
So I want to take the team building and the business model changes that you needed to make and put it on the shelf a little bit for now. We'll dive into it afterwards. But first and foremost, we also want to recognize the comment you just mentioned in terms of just opening an app and it's used everywhere. That does not mean that you're a global company. It is first when you start to prove that you can operate in the new market and find product market fit and build a team there. That is when you start to become that global organization, in our opinion. But I wanted to double click a little bit on the culture, because I'm curious to learn from you a little bit on whether or not you think that criteria of it has to rain could change in the future. For example, in some Asian countries, they use umbrellas to protect from the sun. Even it goes all the way back to the Egyptian days where they used the umbrella to protect the emperors and everything to make sure they didn't get the sun on them, right? And in, for example, in a lot of Asian cultures, the reason being is because it can actually signal poverty when you have a tan because you worked in the fields. So I'm curious to understand, is that something you've thought about from a cultural perspective in terms of Asia? Do you think that might change? You could consider markets where it's more protecting from the sun than protecting from the rain.
Yeah. So in Brazil, like the sun is really like strong. So we have also this sun component, and we have people using the umbrella even on the sun. So right. we have a big operation, we have people using every day. So they get an umbrella even if it's not raining, because right. if it rains, they will have the umbrella and then they will use it. But I think we have this cultural component. In Asia, it rains a lot. So even if it's for sun or for rain, we have this product. But when we build our product, we are trying and we build our products like for rain and for sun. So when you think about the umbrella, it has a UV protection inside. Right. So our umbrella already we already build a product that's prepared for sun. So we have a UV protection, even like we say, you can protect for skincare it's a good strategy and we use this, but for our experience, especially in Europe and the United States, people are not using for the sun. people are more using people use for rain and perhaps in the future people will use for the sun. If it's if it becomes so easy and okay, I have an umbrella, I use it for sun, I use it for rain. But I think we have these cultural components. When you launch in Asia, for example, people are probably using even for a heavy users for sun, right. It will appear more frequently.
Right. It's just a thought, and it's obviously not
verified. But right? I agree
with Starbucks expansion into Asia, one of the reasons why they were so successful was because they positioned themselves as a premium product, right? And going back to that cultural element of not being in the farm, but protecting from the sun because they don't want to be seen as poor people, maybe there could be an interesting approach by positioning Rentbrella as a premium solution or something you can go and grab in that market. Because when people walk around with Starbucks coffee in China, it is that status symbol. You walk around with your fancy bag around the city, say, hey, I got the Starbucks cup, etc. So just a thought, maybe.
And based on this, like if you think about the last 2 years, like when we launched, it wasn't, we didn't have this mindset, but the right. last 2 years, companies are really worried about environmental and right. they're really worried about ESG solutions.
True.
So when you think about umbrellas, over 1 billion umbrellas are incorrectly discarded worldwide and they reach the landfill. So it could build over 25 Eiffel Towers of broken umbrellas.
Right.
I think our solution first aimed to reduce the incorrectly discarded umbrellas that reach the landfill. And also, we think about sustainability in every aspect of our products. So the umbrellas are made of rPET fabric. which are like recycled from PET bottles, for example, and which we transform these plastic in umbrellas. And then after the umbrellas use it over 200 times, and probably it gets broken because it happens. We have a project that calls here in Brazil we calls like here in Brazil guarda umbrella it calls guarda chuva. So we say like that saves more than the umbrella that we try to save the world. So we transform the umbrellas into face masks, eco bags, pencil cases, and we donate to NGOs and to people who need it. So we have like we take advantage and we take care of the whole process of the umbrella. So first it was like a bottle that would be like we reach the landfill, we transform it into a fabric of the umbrella. So we transform it into an umbrella, and then after the life cycle of the umbrella ends, we transform into face masks, eco bags, pencil cases, and we donate. So we have this strong sustainable angle, and many companies are like looking for a solution. Okay, we need like, even if it's a location, okay, here it rains like five days per month or 10 days per month. Like we need the solution because we don't want to give the umbrellas to all the employees and then they get it lost. And then they need the next day, they need it again. And they are thinking about this sustainable solution. They're thinking about the environmental. So that's something that's cultural, and especially the last 2 years, people are changing the mindset and looking for those sustainable solutions.
I have a feeling if you go to Japan at some point, sorry to comment here, and I think there's an opportunity there for sure, because ESG is on top of the government agenda, on top of the corporate agenda, and also it rains a lot in Tokyo, etc. So that might be an interesting city to look at in the future.
So
yeah.
One of the reasons why I was particularly interested to have you on is because, you know, most people will think of your business and be like, oh yeah, that's simple. You just, whatever, you take a bucket and you put a bunch of umbrellas in there, right? And I want to go back to a couple things you said. One of the things you talked about briefly amongst a number of things when you were talking about your growth journey had to do with some important things that needed to happen in I think it was New York or in US before you could fully operate. You know, most people don't think about that. They're like, they'll kind of make this assumption, oh, especially with something as simple as umbrellas, it's like, hey, the company way of doing things, the way we did this in Brazil, it's pretty easy. We're just going to go do that everywhere. But like, no matter what your business is, you need to think about culture. You need to think about things like government regulation. I think that ties into this this process we created called the you know, global agile methodology, sort of a global layer on the lean methodology. One of the steps in the process is what we call the business model localization canvas. And that's where you take all aspects of your business and you run it through two key filters that you talked about, government regulation and culture, to sort of come up with what your hypotheses are for the new market. And then you go validate those hypotheses. But dig in a little bit more and talk about that process. Maybe use New York or London as an example. But you know, one, when it comes to regulation, I'm just even curious what regulation you need to think about, but kind of walk through that process and how some of your business had to change as you've localized for those markets.
So especially for the US, when you think about like one of the things that we had never listened when we were in Brazil, it's about like the insurance problem. So everything in the US depends on the insurance. So it's in order for you to install a machine anywhere in the US, you need like a certificate of insurance. And in order to have the certificate of insurance, you need to have like full of certifications regarding safety, regarding fire, regarding snow. So for example, we had to like to submit the machines, like to send the machines to California, to New York, to Germany, to make a lot of tests regarding safety, regarding like to get all the certifications. So that was like a tough process, very long process with a long of things, and many things change on our, especially on our hardware because of it, because like we had to use all the electronical components that were already certified, which were much more expensive. We had to use and we had to change the way the machine could be placed in the locations. in order to fulfill all the certifications requirements. So that was one of the things that really changed the way. And for example, even the process of installing a new machine in a building or in a hotel changed because we had like the insurance component. So when installing something before installing, we need to issue a certificate and to make sure everything is right and to approve this with the building and then install. And that's something completely different from what we were and what we expected and what we were used. And it's really interesting that because even each location has like specific requirements that turns the process very bureaucratic and very difficult to fulfill. So that's something that really changed the way, and we had to focus and get deep and even change the way we made like installations, the way we produce the machines, and we tried like internally, like in Rentrella, we have a concept that we try to standardize everything we can. So when we got all those changes on the machines and on the process, we decided to standardize the most difficult machine. Like for the US, it's the standard for world, for everywhere in the world. So even if it's for Brazil, for the US, or for London, we will send like the US machine, which has like the most highest safety standards. And that's that's something that we try to do with everything, with the app, with the systems, with the operations. So we try to standardize everything to make sure it would work. And when we see something that changes a specific complexity that we find in a specific location, we see if it's something that we can remove, or if it cannot be removed, how we can adapt to it, how we can make sure it will work with this complexity, and especially when we think about behavior, when we think about culture. So for example, with employees, how we deal with employees, how we deal with the benefits that we have in each location, how we deal with the whole process of the language is difficult because like we have like more than 100 employees worldwide, and the main language is Portuguese. And in Brazil, it's very difficult to find people that speak English. It's difficult to have like many languages. And here in Brazil, we try to make English like the main language. So we hired like English teachers for all the employees. And even if it's like an operation guy, he wants to speak English, he can have an English teacher to teach him how to speak English properly to try to, at least to have like a more like a easy communication. And it's always when the problems are most common on the communication side. So that's one something that we look for. And one of the things that I think are really overlooked when expanding it's the supply chain management. We changed like drastically when we expand worldwide. So most of like part of the things that we buy are from China, and then like things change really fast. So regulations change really fast. You cannot buy from China. The components are missing, especially after COVID. The things, especially electronic components were missing worldwide. So it's something that's really overlooked, and it's important to think about like if you want to expand worldwide, you need to have like probably like three different suppliers from three different countries to make sure it won't be to make sure it will work properly. And one last thing that you told, and I think it's really relevant and is the most important thing when expanding, is you need to have like a global mindset, and you need to understand that each country has their own way of working, their own mindset, and you need to live a little bit there to understand how things are done. And that's something that we cannot, like, even that if you study like a couple of months about the country. If you don't live there, it's very, very difficult to understand the culture and to understand how things are done. So for us in Brazil, even like São Paulo, where we live, is one of the most busy cities and one of the most crazy cities in the world. But when you got in New York, like it was even crazy. we need to live there. We need to, like, to be there at least like for 2 or 3 months to understand how things are done, to understand how people live there, how they deal with work. How do you, for example, in London, everyone is very polite. Everyone is very like they dress like with shirts for a meeting, and it's difficult. It's very different from New York. And you need to, like, when you are like a CEO of a global company, you need to try to talk to those persons by the same level, by the same way. So they can see you as a leader, so they can see you as a manager, and that's something really, really important.
I think a lot of what you said is great, and I think, you know, again, going back to it, just your business is something I think everyone can understand. And so it's great to see, you know, at least from our perspective, some of the universality of the concepts we're talking about, right? Like the idea of you thinking, okay, from a, you know, building the machine perspective, look at like globally, what are the most strict rules around these machines and insurance and other things. That's the same thing that a tech company is doing when they go to, okay, data. Like, you know, customer data and GDPR and deciding, okay, do we have a universal policy globally, or are we going to change this per country? You know, we talked on the cultural side. I think there's often, especially fast growing companies, they'll say like, okay, well, we have universal product market fit. But that's not true. Even things like value proposition, you need to think about. We talked to people from LinkedIn and they had to change their value proposition in different countries, just like we've been talking about, like Klaus brought up, the value proposition might be different. It might not be rain in every country. It might be the sun. But you guys still offer a solution. So I just think it's interesting to look at a business that I think everybody can wrap their heads around and understand, and see how these things like regulation, like culture, like deciding what to localize, what not to, what's scalable, how to do some universality of things, how that factors into so many things.
Exactly. Amazing.
I want to go maybe into some more tactical recommendations, Freddie, because we talk often to companies that have what we call hard-coded the business around their first initial market. And you talked a little bit about Rendbrella having spoken mostly Portuguese at the office, in Sao Paulo initially, and then you had to transition, right? And we spoke to a Korean company as well as a Japanese company that has had over like 400, 500, 600 employees and raised hundreds and hundreds of millions of dollars, but they primarily built a Korean and or Japanese organization. And so when you then start to expand, it becomes a little bit hard, because then all of a sudden the people you hire in, let's say, Indonesia or in the US or wherever that is, they're going to have to deal with the HR department, with product, with engineering, all these different departments that may not be used to deal with other cultures, etc. I guess my question to you is that how do you change that in an organization? How do you sort of re-engineer the company to be able to respond to this organizational change and then build better collaboration between local teams and obviously at the headquarters where you're based?
Perfect. So that's an excellent question. It was one of the most discussed things that we had here when we started expanding, especially regarding the language, because we have a lot of operations guys, which go to the machines, they maintain the machines, they clean the machines, and like for those guys, it's even difficult to speak English and to have like they didn't have like the opportunity to learn English at school or to make like English classes during their life. So like here at Rendbrella is the first time they are dealing with English. So that's something that we, when we started like thinking about international expansion, it was in 2020. And okay, let's start our international expansion. We hired like a presencial, like a local teacher to be in this inside the company. And this person could help anyone with translations and even with help. And even anyone could have like private classes with the teacher and that could help with everything regarding the language. And what we did is like we made for all the like heads and all the like the leadership. We made it was obvious that everyone should speak English. So everyone that didn't speak English, it had to do like 3 times or 4 times English classes every single week to make sure they would speak at least like a basic level of English. And even for us, like for me, for Nathan, it was not common to speak English. Okay, we speak English when we traveled and we had like opportunity to learn a little bit more English during our life. But even for speaking English, like we started speaking English between us to learn and to practice and to make sure like we could like deal with the global team. And that's something really, really important. That's something that was a change in the hiring process. So when hiring new talents, we always looked for someone that could speak English. So they could have like new relationships with the global team. And it's something that we are trying to improve day by day. So it's something that we're always looking at and trying to improve. So communication is everything. So if you can get a good communication with everyone, is the way we can improve our company and everyone can help and takes part on our growth. One of the things that we did that really helped our international team to be at the same page is that me and Nathan, which are the co-founders, we got almost 1 hour, 2 hours per week to talk with the international talents. So we make like a international meeting where we explain everything that's happening in the whole company, and anyone can participate in this meeting. So we explain what we're doing, where we're expanding, what are the main problems we're facing on our expansion, on our operations, on our marketing, our sales, and everything. So that's something that really helped because it's an English meeting. And everyone can participate and everyone can deal with it. And one other thing that we always doing and trying to that always help is the leadership, especially like the local leadership. They always try to make like at least once a month an event with the local team to hear their thoughts, to hear what they think, to hear what they have to say about the company or about an improvement on the practice that we are like working the way the process work. And we bring those thoughts to the global management to make sure what we can learn of it, what we can learn and what we can implement worldwide. Maybe something only local, something that only work like for the United States or only for England. Maybe something that we can apply everywhere. So for example, one good example in London, one of like we got some users said, I would like to use your service without the app. I would like to use a web app. So I couldn't I didn't have to download the app and make all the process of having an app on my phone. I would like to use a web app. And then we thought it would be an interesting idea to offer this worldwide for Brazil, for the United States, for everywhere. So it started in London, and then now it will be spread in all other countries. So that's something that it was like born locally. We found it was a good idea, and it would be good to spread it in the other countries and to turn it like a global solution.
Right.
I love that. There's a lot of things that's sort of packed in here. One is leadership commitment, obviously, to international, making sure you sort of lead the way and pave the way to make that change to the organization. Then you talked about feedback loops, making sure you set these mechanisms up in the organization so you gain insights from local markets and build that collaboration and trust between teams. And then the last one you talked about was two-way innovation, right? Where you learn from that local market and find an interesting idea, then bring that up through the entire organization. To give an example, the Slack send button originated actually from Japan because users in Japan were uncomfortable because they sent the messages too early, because originally you just pressed enter. And so that was a big conversation amongst the leadership team, whether or not they should implement that, because they're all about speed of communication. So kind of that request went a little bit against the core values of the organization, if you will, right? And so, but they decided to actually implement and integrate it within the platform, make it optional. So I love those comments you just made, because they hit a lot of on a lot of the main points in our book. So, you know, I can hear and sense, and for sure you are in the category of a global glass organization that we describe in the book.
Amazing.
So I'm curious, maybe just to dig a little deeper to see if there's any other interesting insights. You know, you talked about, to put it in some of the words we use, the importance of thinking global day one and how that goes across your organization. So you talked about the name, you talked about English being integrated in, you know, more of a universal language in terms of people communicating, talked about some of the things that, that Klaus just recapped. Were there any other ways that you thought, you know, global day one, was there anything, for example, around company culture that was important that, that you guys thought about from the beginning?
So actually, like at the beginning, we just need to like validate our business model to operate and to make things done locally. So that's something I always tell everyone that tells me, how did you make the expansion? I want to start my company. I want to make a global business. And I always answer like think globally. Think about something that you want to make global, but starts locally. Because when you start, like you start the operations and you see how it works, and then we get improvements every single month. And then we after you are in the right moment to turn the operations global, then we start. So when we start, like our mission was like to make people rent umbrellas. So that's like we had the main, like our main challenge when we started was to develop the whole technology behind the machines. So we developed the whole machine, the whole technology, where people could like rent an umbrella, they could withdraw an umbrella, they could return the umbrella, they could use the service by using by an app. So like at that moment, like we wanted to create something global. We made like specific things to make it easier to turn it international when the time was ready. But when we started, like we just wanted to make things done right. We wanted people to love our service locally and to make sure it would work. And that's something we need to create a great product. And when you create this great product, think globally, but build it locally. So that's something I would recommend. And that's something that we did that worked really well for us. So after, okay, we had already a big operation. We have over 400 locations. We have over 30,000 umbrellas being shared every single rainy day. We had over 500 people per minute using our service. Then, now we're ready to expand to other locations, to other countries. Let's do what we did great in Brazil. Let's do this worldwide. So that was our mindset, and that was our international strategy.
I love that. So in our book or in the cover, we say how the world's fastest growing companies scale globally by focusing locally. And that was just what you said as well in the way that you approach expansion. I want to move over to the topic of hiring, because you mentioned a little bit earlier, you had to fire 3 or 4 times the team in New York, I believe you mentioned earlier, right? And one thing is finding, you know, an individual with the right mindset, right? And in our book, we talk about the entrepreneurial mindset as an international. people who have an agile mindset, but also have the ability and sort of the muscle and the influence within an organization to navigate bureaucracy and building coalition of buy-in. And then that culture mindset, people who are empathetic to local markets, local cultures, local ecosystems, to then identify how you need to adapt the business to be successful in expanding into that market. But then there's the other element in terms of building the right team, where obviously there is these entrepreneurial skill sets that we just defined, but then there's also leadership skills for distributed organizations. But what we talk in particular about, what's important is the bridge between local knowledge and company knowledge. On the local knowledge side is local business experience, local language skills, local networks, pride in local culture. And on the company side, company core values and principles alignment, culture fit, and then the ability to get things done internally. And so I wanted to kind of put this up at least in front of you and ask you the question in terms of, what were some of the initial mistakes you made in terms of hiring, and what did you do to correct that to ensure you hired the right people, but also built the right teams to then successfully lead your expansion in those local markets?
Perfect. So first, when we started operations in New York, we thought we could like hired the same way we hired in Brazil. So we looked for like people which with the background for like the same levels we found here in Brazil. And then it was really difficult to find right people and find like the right talents that could help us and could understand our culture and could help us with the growth. So what we found, it was a bad moment, especially like in the United States. It was like during COVID, like after COVID, so things were not yet right. So people were not back yet to the offices. It was like the city was a little bit empty yet. So that was one of the most problems that we faced when we started. So yes, it was difficult to find people. It was difficult to interview people. It was difficult to hire people. So we got a few months to find the talents to hire. And then what we found in the United States is like it's a very like the talent, they always have other opportunities. So like they are always looking for new opportunities. If they are working for a company, we train them, we make sure they are like already ready for the job. And then like they are always looking for a better opportunity. They are always looking what I can do to, like to increase my salary, to grow. And that's something that we understood in New York, that we need to be very close to the employee. To make sure that he's like happy in this job, in his job, and he's satisfied with like how much he's receiving and the way he's working. So that's something that we didn't know when we started, because like here in Brazil, like once per year we talk to the employee to make sure like the salary makes sense and everything. But in New York, in the United States, it's different. It's different. We need to be very close to the employee to know what's happening to him and to be part of his life. So to understand what's happening not only on the job, but also in his life, to make sure you fulfill his expectations and to make sure you have the same expectations regarding growth, regarding the expansion, and regarding his job. So that's something that we learned after like a few hires that didn't work well. So the guys came in, and then after like a few months, they said, oh, I had another opportunity, I'm leaving. The other guy, oh, I don't like the job. Like then we had to fire. So that's something that it took some time to understand how the behavior of the employees and the behavior of the people in New York was. So that's something that changed. And after we hired like a leader locally, and he understood how things were done there, and then he could like hire the right guys, and it was much better. So like I think like for the last year, we didn't had to fire anyone, and it was like much. It was like a really real success on the hiring, like on the hiring subject. So that's something good.
And just to clarify that, so do you think the big change was having a local leader be part of that recruiting, or was it some other things you did to differentiate and you know find those people?
I think it was like a few things. Like we had to change like the profile of the people that we were hiring before. And also having like a local guy with experience on like managing the team and with experience on leadership, it also helped us because like even that I'm going to the US like every month, I'm not close. And when I'm in the US, I'm the whole day making meetings and I'm the whole day like with clients and with partners. So it's very difficult to be close to the employees, very difficult to build a relationship with them. So when we have a, like a local manager making all these processes much easier, and it helps to turn the team motivated and make sure everything is working just fine.
Yeah, and I think to what we're showing on the screen right now in terms of this overlap between local knowledge and company knowledge. And there's certain things you can do to develop that company knowledge, but needing to have that local knowledge is core to your success. And I think you validate that when you're talking about the experience in your New York expansion. I'm curious what you can share. What's next for Rentbrella? What does international expansion look like?
So our strategy, like, the global market changed a lot, especially like the last year. So we're really like making sure that we are like very efficient in terms of operations. And so we are making sure the operations is like working perfectly before launching new cities around the world. So we're really focused on New York and London and in Brazil that we have our main operation. So what's next? Like we expect this year to open a new countries. So we hope to we are looking especially for Europe, a few countries in Europe and other cities in the United States, which we have already demand. So that's something important. So when we get into a new country, we develop a lot of relationship with clients and stakeholders, and that really helps you expand to other cities. So that now we have like plenty of relationship with clients and partners in the United States. So it's much easier to expand to Chicago, to Atlanta, to Seattle, to Miami, to a couple of cities in the United States. And that's also for Europe. So after London, we want to go and grow in Europe. So we are doing the same strategy that we did in London, in New York, with all the knowledge we have now regarding the international expansion experience.
Awesome. We have taken a lot of time away from you today, Freddie, and we want to move into the last segment of the podcast. And so this final piece, a segment is called Three Pieces of Advice. So imagine you go down the elevator and you can only answer very, very, very quickly and promptly. Are you ready for the three questions?
Yeah, sure.
Awesome. What one piece of advice would you give to someone interested in building a career around an international business?
So my advice would be first, get as much experience and knowledge on the field of international business. So research different type of international business, study abroad if you can, travel, look for internships or opportunities as analyst or as expansion manager in other companies that are making international expansions. So that's something that that I would recommend and advise to people who are looking to like build a career in the international expansion.
Awesome. I love that. I think in particular, the note about being immersed in a new culture is really, really important because that gives you that cultural agility and be able to respond you know, in different two different environments, right? So I think that's a really important note. Second question is, what one piece of advice do you have for a business leader expanding a business to new markets?
My advice would be research the new markets you're entering and understand the local customs, regulations, consumer preferences, making sure like your product is right and is right tailored for the local market. Understand the competition. So that's something we didn't face. I think it was something that really helped us grow faster. So understand the competition locally and see how you can tailor your product to make sure it attends all the customers' needs.
Awesome. The final question, what one piece of advice would you have for your younger self? I know you're young or still, but maybe the 14-year-old, 15-year-old Freddie.
Yeah, so I would focus on building relationships with everyone, like with friends, even when you are like in school or university, to build relationship and really strong relationship, because those guys will be working in big companies in the future, and that's the most important thing that will help you to grow. So use these relationships to help you navigate and to achieve success on sales, on fundraising, and on building your career. So be like focused on building relationships, and those relationships will help you to create trust and loyalty over time.
I love it. Awesome. Thank you.
Freddie, thanks for sharing so many great insights. I'm looking at some of my notes here. I mean, you know, think globally from the beginning, but start building locally. The importance of being immersed in local cultures to truly understand it as you enter markets. The importance of having these regular cadence and setting up processes to allow for feedback loops. Same thing with two-way innovation. Set up processes so that you can find things in local markets that might work across your global footprint. The importance of having strong local leaders. And then, you know, of course, increasingly as you expand throughout the world, we learn that it's okay to leave your umbrella at home when it's raining or when it's sunny, because umbrella's got you covered, right?
Exactly. Thank you, guys. I really appreciate. And I hope I can help people who are looking for international expansion. And I'm really open to anyone who wants to talk and wants to know more about Rentbrella and about our expansion plan.
Awesome.